A podcast of the cinema. Did we lose like the first second of that theme song somewhere?
I think the music box is trying to eat the song.
Oh dear. We can't have that.
Okay, so here's the thing. Most of you know this by now, but let's say you're new. This theme song comes out of a CD player that we just point a microphone at.
Yes.
It's
how we roll, people.
So, I don't know what just happened, but it ate the first chunk of the theme.
Well, we'll try to not have that happen again.
Because I know y'all love to luxuriate in the 30-second theme song.
I almost feel like we have to reintroduce ourselves to the world because it's been three weeks since we did a podcast.
Each episode, we have to reintroduce ourselves to the world in case
it's someone's first episode.
In case it's someone's first time.
Well, you're Dave White.
That is correct.
I'm Alonzo Duraldi.
That is also correct.
We are film critics, and we are married to each other.
And this is a podcast of the cinema.
Yes, it is.
You're right that we have not done a show in 3 weeks. There was a reason.
There was.
First, one weekend, we didn't have a show because you were out of town.
Correct.
And then, the next weekend, we didn't have a show because you couldn't talk anymore.
Because when I was out of town, I was in a house with a dog and a cat.
And the devil got your throat.
Basically, yes. So, even now, you're hearing me at about 60%?
No. You're pretty much there.
You think?
You're coughing and hacking and going with your throat.
No, but I still I feel like there are tones I can't hit yet. Not like I'm an opera singer, but you know, like in my range of speaking voice, I can tell there are areas I'm not ready to get to yet. You know.
Are you saying this is your...
This is me on the road to recovery.
This is you in the red jumpsuit.
Maybe, but we'll talk about that on our next episode.
So here's what's going on. For those of y'all who are not just here for the first time. Because we had to take a little break for Alonzo's throat to return to normal so he could speak. Here is the list of films that we have seen but not talked about yet on this show.
Well, okay.
Here they are.
This episode is going to have a title, so people will already know what we're going to talk about on this episode.
I just want to give everybody an overview.
Fine.
I think it's helpful.
All right.
If it were me, if I were a listener, I'd be like,
all the information.
They're only going to do 5 movies this episode, but what about this? And what about this? And what about this? I demand cinema to be discussed.
Fair enough.
All right. Hotel by the River. This is in no particular order. Birds of Passage. Everybody Knows. Climax. Captain Marvel. Transit. 5 Feet Apart. The Aftermath. The Mustang. Ash is Purest White. Your Face, and Us. That's 11 films.
Well,
I do not have it in me to talk about 11 films in one day. And so
on this or any other day.
Yesterday I had this big idea, and I think I even said so on the mic when we recorded LKTV, which is a Patreon show. We'll talk about that later. I had this big idea. We're just going to do a marathon show today. Just knock it all out. And then I woke up this morning and I thought, that seems exhausting. And
for us and for our listeners,
would ruin what grasp you have on your voice.
Also that.
Right now. So we're going to cut this list in half-ish and cover the ones that are the farthest back. Wednesday, we're going to come back. We're going to do another one.
So you've got time to see us before we spoil it.
When we do talk about us, we'll talk about it at the top of the show.
And then save the spoilers.
And then save the spoilers for the end of the show, something that we have done before.
Yes.
The other reason we can't do a marathon show is that I have a very large amount of vegetable chopping to do this afternoon.
Well, you brought it on yourself.
I've already done the vegetable shopping.
Oh, have you?
But now I've done the vegetable chopping.
Have you done the shopping?
You did the shopping.
Thank you.
I sent you with a list and you picked up what I needed and you came home. And I thank you very much for that. You're a very supportive spouse.
I appreciate that.
You're lovely. You're helpful. You're real cute. You got a haircut this week. You look adorable with it.
Thanks.
And
shoeshine boy. You are humble and lovable.
But this is a... I got this cookbook. I got the second Ottolenghi cookbook called Plenty More. The first one was called
Plenty.
Yeah. Primarily.
Starring Meryl Streep.
These are vegetable recipes. So I'm making a root vegetable pot pie today from this cookbook. Now, in the cookbook, it comes in little individual pies. I was like, no. Our friends are hearty eaters, and so a little mini, like, oh, here's a little, it's a tiny little one on one plate.
Pilette.
I've more or less doubled to tripled the amount of food in this recipe to make enough for my hungry guys. What's that from, an Amy Schumer?
No, sketch? It's a Vanessa Bayer. I love how, like, no one has ever quite rehabilitated the word parsnip, but if you say root vegetables, then people are suddenly down.
Well, no, it's got parsnips in it, I know. Among other things.
I'm just saying, words like parsnip, turnip, and rutabaga have become like vegetable punchlines, but root vegetable sounds, you know, hearty and healthy.
Well, this is a variety of root vegetables in this pot pie. One of them is parsnips. No turnips or rutabagas, although I bet they would be delicious. I don't know if anyone out there hates these vegetables without ever having tried them, but all of them are great in, recipes.
You have chopped up tiny bits of turnip for me.
I have.
Into a rice dish that's awfully
correct.
Delicious.
And yes.
If the turnips weren't delicious, they at least were inoffensive. I couldn't pick them out of a lineup.
So, I still have a significant amount of vegetable chopping to do.
Yes.
After we finish this, I got to roll out my dough. It's a production today.
Apparently.
This is, this isn't just throw it in the pan Sunday dinner.
No.
This is an event.
Emily, why do you have to make such a production out of everything? Google Great American Soup commercial, if you've ever seen that.
I don't know that I have seen
that. Oh, yes, you have.
I don't know what you're talking about.
With Ann Miller.
All right.
The one that Stan Freberg directed for a company that did not last very long, but it was like the most expensive commercial ever made at that point.
Oh, really? Okay. And I have seen it.
You've seen it.
But what is the...
The punchline is she comes dancing back into her husband's arms and he says, Emily, why do you have to make such a production out of everything?
Oh, I see. Well, this is a production today because there's just a lot of stuff.
Yes. Involved. Many steps.
I had to go on the hunt for black mustard seeds, mm-hmm. which are part of this recipe. They are not in every supermarket. They are not in most supermarkets.
No.
Anyway, I know this is enthralling.
For more of this, get a little
later,
on our Patreon page.
Later. Captain Marvel lady?
Let's do that.
why don't you describe this film?
Okay.
Because when I see a Marvel film or a DC film or any superhero film,
right.
I watch it, and a few times during each film, I say to myself silently, I don't know what they're talking about anymore. And then there's a big fight at the end, and then everyone is happy, and that's the end. And when I'm done watching it, I think, I had a very good time. Sometimes I didn't know what they were talking about anymore. Because there's, you know, comic book chat that I don't... It's for you people.
Sure.
And by you people, I mean you, Alonzo Duralde, and all the other nerds.
Well, and believe me, I'm a lot less comic booky than a lot of people. I'm more comic booky than you are.
So without getting too heavy into it, explain what happens in this movie, please.
Okay, yeah. So we meet Brie Larson on a distant planet, the Kree planet of Hala.
Yes.
She is a super soldier known as Vierce. She has tremendous power. Jude Law is training her and telling her to stop being so dang emotional, woman. She cannot remember who she is or where she came from. Everybody calls her Vierce.
Yeah.
And the Kree have, for a very long time, been at war with the Skrulls.
Okay.
The Skrulls are a race of shape-shifting aliens. And she is sent out on a mission to capture one of them or something. It's been a few weeks since I've seen it now. Anyway, things go ass over tea kettle, and she realizes that that she may be being misled about things from her past and her present, and she winds up on Earth. 1995 Earth, to be specific.
Yes.
She crashes into a Blockbuster video, and that's as 1995 as you can get.
Yes.
She encounters S.H.I.E.L.D. agents, Nick Fury and... why am I always forgetting his name?
Clark Gregg.
And Clark Gregg, thank you. they have been digitally youngified. And... Agent Coulson.
Sam Jackson has been digitally younged.
Yeah.
Better than Clark Gregg.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
But they're both. But they're pretty good as far as these things go.
It's better than it's been in the past in other films. They keep getting better at it.
You can say it's because this is usually benefiting old white men, so that's why this technology has raced forward so quickly. When you think back at, like, you know, the youngified Jeff Bridges in Tron Legacy, he did not look nearly this good.
He looked a little cartoonish. A
little bit.
Yeah.
You know, Michael Douglas in Ant-Man, a little bit better. But with Sam Jackson, this is the best I've seen it ever. And apparently they're doing a ton of it in the new Scorsese movie for, like, De Niro, Pacino, and Joe Pesci. So there's that to look forward to.
Okay.
Anyway.
Yeah.
So she crash lands. They're trying to figure out what's going on. This is really their first encounter with aliens. And the Kree and the Skrulls both show up, and things get complicated. She discovers that she's actually an Air Force pilot named Carol Danvers, who has lost her memory and had some alien encounter that imbued her with this extraordinary power.
Yeah.
And now it's up to her to figure out how to use it and who the real good guys are. And that's all I'll say.
Oh, we can't talk about...
Is
there a reveal?
It's like 3 weeks now. I mean, I guess we can.
Can we talk about the way that the Skrulls turn out to be? Is that a spoiler?
I think at this point we might as well. Because if you were going to see Captain Marvel, you went to see Captain Marvel. Right?
Yeah.
The Skrulls wind up being the good guys, which is a huge deal.
It is
for the Marvel narrative.
Oh,
in the
I see.
Comics, they have never been the good guy. They're always the bad guy.
I see.
But in the movies...
Who's mad about this?
Nobody, actually.
No one's mad about this.
In the movies, they have already...
They're just mad that there's a film about a woman.
Yes.
Okay.
They couldn't get past that part.
Get that clear.
Yes.
Yeah.
The movies have already given us the Lee Pace character, whose name I can never remember.
Yes.
As a Kree, and he's clearly bad news.
Right.
So in the movies, the Kree are more of a pain in the ass, and so now the Skrulls, as it turns out, not the bad guys that Vierce has been, you know, taught that they were. April compared this plot twist to Starship Troopers.
Yes.
Which I thought was a fair comparison.
Yes.
I had a good time with this movie. It's okay. Very entertaining. Brie Larson has a lot of fun with this, and I think giving us a character with amnesia makes the upteenth origin story a little more easy to take.
Yes.
Because we're learning it in bits and pieces and fragments the same way that she is.
Yes.
There's this great speech between her and her friend Maria Rambeau, basically, where they're telling her, where she tells Carol that basically, look, you've always been this person, you've always been this hero, you know, whether even before you could shoot things out of your hand, you've always been a hero. You know, how did you feel about the 90s pop culture-ness of it? Do you think it was too much or just enough? Or?
Admittedly, it is entertaining.
Yeah.
It's also that thing that happens when a film goes back in time and is set in a different era and they tell you the year, but then they just throw everything from the decade at you.
Okay, was not 1995?
Oh God, I can't remember. But in the film, I sat there thinking, that's after 1995. That was also after 1995. Like, there's a lazy...
For instance, she's in front of a Rock the Vote poster at one point.
Yeah,
was that 96 that was or early, 4? Early. Actually, you know what? I think that was 92, because that was the first Clinton. So never mind. That's okay.
The voting, the pop culture voting propaganda that I enjoyed the best from 1992 was D-Light singing Vote Baby Vote. You should go to the YouTube and look for it. D-Light, more important to the 90s than Nirvana. I miss them so much. I wish they would come back. And, I love Nirvana, but come on. Every morning when you wake up, do you want to hear Heart-Shaped Box? Or do you want to hear
Groove
is in the Heart? I know the answer. Yeah. So.
Now, why did D-Light get away with it and Jellyfish didn't? That aesthetic?
Because they were house music.
Oh, there you go.
And house music is for girls.
And people on drugs.
And people on drugs. And gay dudes.
Right.
And rock and roll is for boys.
Right, yes.
And when boys don't adhere to the boy rule book,
they must be shunned.
Other boys don't want to be around them.
Right.
And so Jellyfish pops up, this band he's talking about, Jellyfish, who acted like characters from a 1970s children's Saturday morning cartoon.
Right.
They were having a laugh, and boys don't like to have a laugh, you see. Boys are very serious and frowny. Boys don't like house music because that's dancing, and dancing is a homosexual activity.
Right.
Yeah. So, anyway, the 1990s stuff in this movie is fine. It's entertaining. It's that pleasure of recognition.
Like, oh yeah, Alta Vista, that was a thing.
It doesn't make the movie better.
Mm.
It just is a cute thing that happens over and over as she encounters this thing or that thing, you know.
Nine Inch Nails t-shirt.
Yeah, she got a Nine Inch Nails t-shirt on. And so I liked that stuff. I didn't mind being confused by the, you know, the blip blip and the blip blip whenever they would start talking about space things.
Right.
I'd be like, I don't know who was that one again? What's the, there's now we're talking about the physics of something and why are you over here and over here at the same time? Like, that was my, I decided to just go with it.
Yes. Sometimes you just have to be like, okay, blah, blah, science, sure, whatever.
Right. I loved Laser Annette Bening.
Yes. We've been wanting that for decades.
Well, I never knew I needed it.
Yeah.
But Annette Bening shooting lasers out of her hands and blowing things up and fighting with people.
Yes, please.
Can she have her own film? Can she?
One can hope.
She's a minor character, but when has that stopped anyone from doing anything?
Indeed.
Aren't we getting a Boba Fett movie pretty soon?
Probably.
Yeah, so who cares? Annette Bening.
There should be an entire Marvel movie that is made up of the actors who are slumming by being in a Marvel movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bring back Glenn Close's character from Guardians of the Galaxy.
Can Annette Bening somehow figure out a way to meet Nicole Kidman
from Aquaman
wearing that full shell outfit at the end that she comes back in?
Only if they can also work in Paul Giamatti as the Rhino.
Yeah. Somebody do that, please.
This is like the American Harry Potter. Like, if you're a schmancy enough actor, eventually you're going to get the superhero paycheck.
Right. And,
And the cat's great.
The cat is so good. And
I'm not even a cat person, and I'm a big fan of
the cat. The cat is so good, and I think that Brie Larson is just the right person for this role.
Yes.
Because she is really appealing. She has a lightness that the film needed, and that she can do.
But she can also bring seriousness to it.
Correct. When she wants to and when she needs to. So she has the right range of qualities.
Yes.
And she's clearly having fun.
Oh, yeah.
So I enjoyed this. It was fine. And I don't mean that in the sort of deprecating way, like, or condescending way or any other way. I mean it like, it was fine. It was pretty good.
Like, I'm not
angry at this, not bored by it.
Every time another one of these Marvel movies comes out, I have to go back to my list at the Wrap where I rank them all and figure out where does this one go.
Right.
And this one goes squarely in the middle.
Yeah.
It, you know, it delivers, it's entertaining.
Right.
It didn't like knock my socks off. It doesn't change things. I mean, yes, it is a big deal that we do have a woman like starring in one of these movies and being co-directed by a woman, all that stuff.
Yes.
That in itself is great. The movie itself doesn't push any envelopes, but it does what it's supposed to do.
Correct. So if you're at all interested in this sort of thing, you'll like it.
Yeah.
Yeah. 3 weeks late.
We're now somewhere between the release of Captain Marvel and Avengers Endgame, so.
Which is how many hours long?
Gossip on the on Twitter says it's going to be 3 hours and 2 minutes.
That is only about 50 minutes shorter than An Elephant Sitting Still, which is a new 4-hour Chinese film that just opened this week in Los Angeles. I'm going to try to figure out a way to go out and see that. The show times are really inconvenient.
I know. It's like when the Bread Factory played. There was no good way to go do it.
It's your entire afternoon will be taken up by this film, and I don't know if I have
that afternoon
in my schedule this week. I gotta get out to it. But I hope it's here for longer than a week. It's also in Glendale. Like, it's not even here in the city proper. You know, you gotta get on the 134 to get out there and see it.
The Californians.
In fact, you don't even have to. No, you have to get on the 101 and then go to the 134.
It's true.
Yeah.
I mean, unless you take Laurel Canyon.
You take Laurel Canyon to the 101 to the 134. It's an hour to get there, is what I'm trying to say.
Yes, it is.
Then 4 hours of a movie.
And then an hour
which
back.
Which drops you out of the movie in rush hour.
Oh, perfect.
So you got to stay at Glendale.
Kill some time.
Well, if I do it, I'll just talk to Margie and get her to
give you some restaurant recs.
Tell me. Listen, I was in Pasadena this week, and I had this big idea that I was going to be.
Y'all, Dave's going to be on Good Christian Fun.
Yeah.
This is a big deal.
It's. I'm very excited. I don't know how excited they are now that we've recorded, but
Oh, stop.
They're delightful. I hope they didn't hate me. That's all
ever
I'm
since he's taped, all I've been hearing is, oh, God, I thought of all the things I didn't say. Oh, I can't help it. I can't help sounding too negative. Oh, I hope they don't hate me.
Nothing came out of your mouth was, like, audible in a coherent way.
Uh-huh.
I just had this, you know how it is. You have a good time while you're doing something.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you're done, you think, oh, I didn't say that and I should have. Or I did say that and maybe I shouldn't have. And
nope, and not me. Never riddled with a second of self-doubt.
Did I come off too harsh and abrasive? You know, like,
tune in for yourselves.
I have been told in my life that my manner can be a bit frightening to people. And so I try not to be that way.
Okay.
But, you know, I was so excited about the topic and just to be on the show. But anyway, on the way home, I was like, no, that I ruined all of that.
Oh, stop.
Like, that's in my head right now. But that's not the story. The story is that I was over in Pasadena and I had this big idea that I was going to kill a little time and go to the Norton Simon Museum, which I haven't been to in years because, again, it's all the way over in Pasadena. And I woke up that morning and Margie, my friend Margie, she gets on Facebook at 5:30 a.m., just like me. And she's like, what's the address of where you're going today? I give her the address. And I know exactly what she's thinking. So before she even texts me back, I Google Pasadena, Jonathan Gold. And up comes a list of Jonathan Gold's recommended Pasadena places to eat, to get food. Margie, place by place, is knocking off the same list.
Funny.
She just got it in her head.
Right.
You know. And so I wound up driving around all these different food places, eating sandwiches, buying pork chops, Armenian meat markets, all these different places. Now I actually have to go back to the Norton Simon if I want to go to the museum just to hang. Anyway, more about my time on the podcast that will probably drop sometime this week.
Yes.
Soon. But be ready. It's coming. I am the guest on a, I don't know, new people might be surprised by this. I will be a guest on an evangelical Christian podcast this week called Good Christian Fun.
Well,
and
that's one way to describe it.
That is exactly, listen, that's how they grew up. That's how I grew up. They are both active Christians still.
Right, and but you make it sound like.
I will be talking about a very unusual segment of 1980s. Christian pop culture. The brief career of a woman named Leslie Phillips, who changed her name to Sam Phillips and had a then 30-year career as a critically acclaimed singer-songwriter and TV composer for Gilmore Girls in the mainstream music world.
Right.
But the first 5 years of her career, from age 19 to like 24, she was a Christian pop star in the 1980s. And what a strange time that was for her.
When you say you're going on...
And for me.
When you say you're going on an evangelical podcast, it sounds like it's a podcast that is promoting evangelism, which it is not.
It is not promoting evangelism. It is promoting profanity, which is a funny thing. Because as I drove home, I thought to myself, did I swear too much? I did use more profanity than they did, but they drop the F-bomb all the time.
Right.
They are Christians who, they cuss. And so it's, but I still drove home thinking, did I dunk it too hard? You know.
And it's a fun podcast. I never listened to it, and I didn't grow up evangelical, but
yeah.
It's very funny. The male co-host...
The male.
Well, there's a guy and a girl.
Kevin.
The guy, Kevin.
Kevin and Caroline. Yeah.
Yes. Kevin was one of the Gilmore guys.
Yeah. So anyway, I think it drops Wednesday. I don't know.
Keep an eye out.
And yeah, I dig them. Let's hope they feel the same about me.
And if you want to hear how bad my laryngitis was,
yeah,
go listen to the Hallmarkies podcast where I talked about the spring fever movies. You can hear literally like what's left of my voice before I completely lost it.
Right.
It's the last shreds.
So, do you know what's the story with the wild horse population of the United States?
What's the story?
There's a lot of them.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I've always heard that it was a diminishing population. You're telling me it's growing?
Well, apparently it grew again, and now they have to sort of contain them. So they have developed these, the government developed these programs with prisons in the area where the horses are trained to become like workhorses for, you know, police ranchers and stuff. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And prisoners volunteer for this program to train these horses. So they have to learn how to be horse trainers. And what they have learned is that not only does it control the wild horse population, but the prisoners are less likely to re-offend.
Recidivism.
Afterward, yeah. Yeah. And I guess that, you know, that makes sense. Because if you have a purpose
and a skill,
you have a skill and a purpose in life, and you become something, and it becomes something you value and you like,
sure,
you want to go do that thing rather than crimes.
Yeah.
So, The Mustang is a film about this subject. Now, if it were a documentary about this subject, I would have probably enjoyed it more.
Okay.
But it is a narrative feature from Belgian director, first-time feature director, and I'm going to kill this person's name, Laure de Clermont-Tonnerre.
Okay.
Who co-wrote the film with Brock Norman Brock,
mm-hmm,
who was the screenwriter of Bronson.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
And of something else that's out, like, right now.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm blanking on what that is.
I don't know.
Go ahead.
It stars Matthias Sunerts, the Belgian actor that you know from Far From the Madding Crowd and Rust and Bone.
Bullhead.
He's the Belgian Tom Hardy, roughly, right?
Sure, yeah.
Yeah.
In fact, didn't they play brothers in that movie?
What movie?
It's based on the Dennis Lehane novel.
I don't know. This was shot in a Nevada prison. Some of the prisoners were in the film. And then there's the plot. Mr. Schoenertz.
And this is how he says it, apparently.
No, yeah. I know. He is a man in isolation. They keep him in isolation because he is so violent and will not mix well with the general prison population. They give him a chance to be a part of this program. And he, at first, is so bad at it that he beats up a horse. Yeah. But bit by bit, he grows to understand what he can do with the horses. So it's a redemption story.
For the people who are yelling at their radios right now.
Their radios?
Well, if they're listening to it in the car.
All right, yeah.
Anyway, Brock Norman Brock also wrote Yardie.
Okay.
Which is the film that was directed by Idris Elba.
All right.
And Tom Hardy and Matthias Sunerts played brothers in The Drop.
Oh, you're right. I had forgotten about The Drop. The Drop is a cool movie.
It's okay.
I liked it a lot. Okay. It's a redemption story.
Yes.
And, metaphors are hanging heavily in the air. Who is the Mustang? Is it the horse? Or is it the wild man who needs to be tamed, you know?
Is he breaking his own spirit or freeing it?
Yeah, it's that. Right, okay.
Gotcha.
There's beautiful filmmaking technique on display. Lots of gorgeous use of landscape and horses and bodies. And the scenes with him and the horse, the more they become sort of partners in the film, are very lovely. And they become friends.
You love a horse.
They become friends, and it's very
horse
nice.
Horse friends movie.
It's not bad. He has an estranged adult daughter who he has to learn to figure out how to communicate with. You find out what he's in prison for, which makes that process even more difficult for them. But there's not enough weight on that subplot, really, for me. It doesn't come off as heavy enough. And it's pretty heavy. So it's much more about the metaphor of a man, you know, learning to be a human being while he teaches his horse friend how to be a horse. So, it's more good than bad.
Okay.
I think it is hampered by the fact that the people who made this movie and who star in this film are not Americans.
I could see that.
So their understanding of...
The West,
their understanding of the American prison system. You know, they've got a very therapeutic understanding of it, which... is not really how it works here,
right?
Most of the time. It's sort of an exceptional film in terms of its story. And Matthias Schoenaerts is fantastic as this guy, as he always is. He so disappears into this character that you forget that he's a, you know, a Belgian art house star, that he is. You think, oh, you're a crime dude from Bakersfield. Like, it's...
No, I remember even back in The Drop thinking, wow, you got that accent down.
Yeah, he doesn't... You don't know where he's from. You think he's from Chino, you know. So, it ain't bad. It's getting a lot of praise. And I don't necessarily feel like praising it that much.
Fair enough.
I'll praise it some.
Sure.
It gets some praise.
Praise it like you should.
Yes. So this is how I should.
So I saw 5 Feet Apart,
which opened, and I couldn't for the life of me tell you where it had come from. No one talked about it. I didn't hear anyone reviewing it. It's like, it feels like it just went whoosh,
I think
it became a mist and evaporated.
Maybe it's aimed at such a specific teen demo that, like, it just didn't cross our, you know, if we read, you know, 17 magazine or something, it would have registered more in our lives.
Maybe.
Not based on a YA novel, but apparently the screenplay was actually turned into a novel before the movie came out.
Oh, so, well then.
It is very much of a piece with particularly like your John Greens, especially The Fault in Our Stars. This is also about terminally ill teens, but they have cystic fibrosis. And
both of them do?
Yes. Actually, several of them do.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But the thing is that because apparently people with CF are so virally susceptible, they can't be within 6 feet of each other, or they'll get each other's, like, you know, bacteria.
That is a function of cystic fibrosis?
Per this movie, yes.
Hmm. All right.
So, you know, what happens when two teens on the same ward fall in love and have to keep each other at a distance?
No, they don't.
They do.
Oh, really?
Yeah, hence the challenge.
What? That,
Well,
do they ever like
the I'm not going to give it away. The heroine.
I'm never going to see this.
Well, some listeners might. You're not the only one I'm talking to.
Okay, fine.
In an act of rebellion, the heroine decides that she's going to be 5 feet apart from him and carries around a pool cue, basically, that they keep between them, you know.
Right.
So the girl is played by Haley Lou Richardson, who is great.
But she's like 25 or something.
Well, she's still in that zone where she can convincingly play a 17-year-old.
She played one of the women in the Hooters.
Yes, in Support the Girls.
She was in Support the Girls. Yes. She was great.
But she was also in The Edge of 17.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
And in Columbus. So she's an interesting young actress.
She's still playing teenage roles. She's
still playing teenage roles and doing it very well.
Okay.
The dude is Cole Sprouse.
Is he... Wait. Which one is Jughead?
Cole Sprouse.
Okay. Where's the brother?
I have no idea.
What happened to him?
I don't know. Okay. He's studying molecular physics for all I know.
What's the brother's name? Hang on.
He's either Zach or Cody. I don't know.
I don't remember which one was which. Yeah, he's 27.
Well, he too is playing. He plays a teenager every dang week.
Okay, so Cole on The Suite Life of Zach and Cody. Uh-huh. He was Cody.
Okay,
I just looked this up on IMDb.
And who was Zach?
Dylan.
Dylan. Yes. Dylan. What's Dylan Sprouse up to?
Let's find out. Weren't they supposed to be like, they're twins, right?
Yeah. Is this a Jeremy Jason London thing where one of them becomes a decent actor and the other one doesn't? Or
he's in a lot of stuff coming up.
Okay.
But it's a bunch of short films.
Oh.
Things I've never heard of. Okay. I don't know. We'll find out. All right. Maybe he's just taking a different path.
There is also a gay best friend.
All right.
Played by Moises Arias.
All right.
Which is nice. We don't get a lot of those in YA movies. And then there
what
is...
What does this gay best friend get to do?
Anything? Mostly he's there to facilitate other people's
of
stuff.
Of course.
He's a gay best friend. That's,
listen,
you know.
Give... Does he also have cystic fibrosis in the
yes,
movie?
He does.
So give the gay cystic fibrosis teen a 5 foot apart boyfriend.
Well,
how about that?
Apparently,
why not?
He just broke up with someone.
Convenient.
And what we come to learn about the character is that he's constantly breaking up with people because he's a, you know, the girl.
Because he's a movie character and they don't want to show gay stuff.
No, they actually do this kind of interestingly. The girl accuses him of like. Not wanting to commit or not wanting to let other people in on, you know, the depth of his illness. And he's like,
yeah.
I don't want to saddle anybody with me once I turn 18 and I'm off my parents' insurance.
Yes.
Then they're stuck with me. You know?
Right. That was Fault in Our Stars sort of situation as well, wasn't it?
I don't know.
Something about insurance.
I don't know. But I mean, I'm glad that somebody brought it up because they're staying at the greatest hospital ever. And in these days, which is like, you know, you might as well, your movie might as well be set on a resort on the moon, you know, if you're going to be getting quality health care.
Yeah. In the United States, anyway.
In the United States. Indeed. Yeah. Indeed. There's a black nurse character who's a little magical in terms of, you know.
This is really sounding wonderful to me.
It's this movie is mostly stupid.
Okay.
But... Haley Lou Richardson.
She's great.
Haley Lou Richardson.
She's really good.
Haley Lou Richardson. Yeah. You know, she's terrific. She imbues this nonsense with far more depth than it deserves. Yeah, the characters are kind of irritating and do things you're like, well, that doesn't make any sense at all. But she's so good that I didn't feel completely... furious at this movie when it was over.
Do people with cystic fibrosis need a better movie?
Probably. Yeah, well, sure, of course they do.
Yeah. That's my question.
I can't think of any other movies about people with cystic fibrosis.
Who's being underserved in this film?
Look,
gay teenagers, everyone with cystic fibrosis.
Yeah. And I'm sure that for people with CF, like, This is the kind of movie where it's like a gay movie 25 years ago or 30 years ago, where maybe they didn't get everything right, but you're just so thrilled to see yourself. But you're going to go see it anyway,
Yeah, I know.
So, you know, I'm sure for people with CF, there are worse things in life than being portrayed on film by people like Haley Richards and Nicole Sprouse, who are really attractive and, you know, charismatic. I mean, Sprouse is fine, but the character is as much BS as the Ansel Elgort character in Fault in Our Stars. he's a bad boy. Whatever.
I may have cystic fibrosis, but I'm a rebel.
Yes, basically.
Really, the last film I can remember with a lead that had cystic fibrosis was the documentary Sick
about Bob Flanagan. I was just thinking about that too.
1997, Sick, The Life and Death of Bob Flanagan, Supermasochist.
Yes.
Supermasochist.
Directed by Kirby Dick.
Yeah. Is a fantastic documentary.
Yes.
About the life and death of the artist Bob Flanagan.
Yeah.
Whose art was performance-based and involved a lot of very painful BDSM practice.
Yes.
And he lived a very long time, much longer than the usual life expectancy.
Yes.
At least back in 97. Maybe advances in medicine have made it easier for people with cystic fibrosis.
Per this movie again, it seems like they're lucky to make it into their 20s.
Yeah.
Again, this is what the movie says. If I'm getting it wrong, I'm just going with what the film says.
Right.
There is a whole thing about, like, if you can get a lung transplant, then that'll maybe buy you a few more years.
Right.
But yeah, what's interesting about Sick is how the nature of the illness and its treatment plays into his fetishes and performance.
Yes. So.
Yeah. So see that movie.
You know, if you can deal. It's tough. It's a
it
tough
is,
movie.
Yes.
It contains, I guess we should say, content warning.
Woo!
There in the film Sick, there is some very extreme performance art, body endurance stuff.
Involving hammer, nails, and a board.
Yeah, and it, I remember seeing it in Dallas with a fairly full house of people.
Yeah,
that's great. And it, there were, is it walking out if people are going, and running to the exit? Because that is what happened.
Only if they don't come back.
They did not come back.
Then it's a walkout.
They did. Well, it was a run out.
Fine.
Yeah. Tough movie.
Yes.
Worth seeing though.
Absolutely.
If you've got the constitution for it.
Yes. And I made it through and I'm a wimp.
So. You're a, you really are. Ash is purest white.
Oh, I thought we were doing what everybody knows.
We can do that after Ash is Purest White.
Oh, we're doing five?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. Ash is Purest White.
It is the latest film from Jia Zhenke. It stars Zhao Dao.
Mm-hmm. His wife.
She has been in every one of his films.
Yes.
Since the early 2000s. They got married sometime in the mid-2000s, I think. Her co-star is a Chinese actor named Liao Fan. They play a sort of underworld gangster couple.
Small time, but
very small time.
Yeah, he's a small town hood, and she is his mall.
Well, no, she's her own. She's her own boss.
True.
In this relationship and in this life that they've become a part of together. It starts in 2001. And it ends in 2018. It travels 17 years of time in their relationship. As China is undergoing sweeping changes, both economically and culturally, and there is, in this film, there is a different working style for Jia Zhenke. Or his early films were very much in the sort of slow cinema world, you know, long static shots, sort of composed situations. And as time moved on, his filmmaking became sort of looser and yet often formally very sort of, you know, boundary pushing. I know A Touch of Sin from a few years ago was about a group of people, and they weren't always intersecting.
Right, it was these sort of parallel storylines.
This is an A to B to C narrative.
Yeah,
about the same people, the same characters throughout. It is a criminal and romantic saga.
It's still pretty deliberate, though. I mean, like,
oh, yes, of
course. He may not be slow cinema anymore, but his pacing is still.
But he's not. No. I don't want to make anybody think that he's, you know, an action director. Mm. He's methodically paced.
Yes.
But his style of filmmaking has changed, and it's fitting for this movie, I think, because it is a straightforward narrative.
Sure.
With drama and, you know, surprises and betrayals and...
Although Mountains May Depart, which is his previous film, also kind of
follows
the characters.
I would say, I think this one does so more successfully.
Yeah, oh, no question.
Yes. Than Mountains May Depart, although I really did like Mountains May Depart. So, this story is about this man and this woman, and they... are involved in, you know, small-time crime. There is a confrontation between him and some other crime dudes. And she takes care of business.
Using his gun.
Correct. Which is a crime that will put you in prison.
Yes.
So she goes for him.
Yes.
She goes to prison for him.
Insists the gun is hers.
When she comes out, he has abandoned her.
Well, everything is different.
And it's more than that. Yes, that's where I was going next. China is changing so quickly that even the world she knew without him is not really around.
The people who were once a gang are now the Chamber of Commerce.
Yes. So she's got to hustle, not only because she's not with him anymore and he has moved on to another woman, she has to make her way
right
in life. And she does. And they keep sort of crisscrossing into and out of each other's lives.
Right.
I won't say where it ends because I found the ending very moving and hopeful, even though these people do wind up a little bit stuck in a situation that they did not create and that they might not have a way out of.
Yeah.
But through it all, this filmmaking is wonderful. He's one of the current best crop of filmmakers that exist in the world. I'm a big fan of what he does and how he does it. The performances are moving and real and emotional from Zhao Dao and from Liao Fan.
The way that, I mean, he to some extent, but she especially, ages in this movie.
Yes.
And it's not like prosthetics, it's not wigs.
It has nothing to do with appearance at all.
No, it's all just the way she carries herself, the way she carries her face. Really, very subtly but very effectively conveys that passage of time.
It's funny. quite often as well because of her.
Yeah.
I would love if at the end of the year, critics groups would remember her.
Absolutely.
For this, because it's still very early in the year, and I fear that they won't.
It's possible. And this played at Cannes last year?
I guess. Yeah. If it comes to your city, go see it.
Yes.
You will not be disappointed. If it's your first film by him, that's great. You can work your way backward and, you know, watch his style change. I highly recommend this.
Yeah. My favorite is still Touch of Sin, but this is very good. Everybody Knows.
Everybody Knows. From Asghar Farhadi.
Yes.
Who is an Iranian filmmaker. Mm-hmm. And this film is set entirely in Spain.
Yes. And if you had shown this to me, you know, with no credits attached, I would never have guessed that it was made by someone who wasn't a Spaniard. Right. And, you know, his films are very specific about modern-day Iran, like The Salesman and stuff.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, play well to an international audience and have a real accessibility to them. So whatever it is he's doing here feels as though he is completely at home and completely in his element.
Right.
You know, but at the same time is, like, again, he's telling stories on a global stage for a global audience.
Yep.
And, you know, he very intuitively gets the cultural specifics, you know, the relationships in this small town and the what people, you know, how people are supposed to look, what the old ladies look like and what the young teens look like and, you know, how people congregate and just all the things. I felt like I was very comfortably inside a Spanish film here.
Talk about what happens.
So Penelope Cruz returns from Argentina, where she is married a wealthy man, to her village in Spain for a family wedding. And, you know, the first chunk of the movie almost feels like, it kind of reminded me of Robert Altman's A Wedding, and that you're being thrown into this sea of people and you're not entirely sure who's related to whom and who's friends and who, you know, who's feuding. Like, you have to kind of pick up clues along the way and sort of piece that together. And so it's very much that kind of movie. And you get this understanding that, like, the town is dying, that if women want to do well, they have to sort of marry some rich guy from somewhere else.
Or just leave.
Or just get the hell out of there, you know.
Right.
During the wedding, the priest, like, thanks Cruz's husband, who's back in Argentina, for giving them the money to do the restoration on the chapel.
Yeah.
You know, and like, her old friend, Javier Bardem, is now running the vineyard that used to belong to her family. And so the wedding happens and big party and da-da-da. And, you know, the camera's kind of going in and out of rooms and into the courtyard and out. And they've also hired these local kids to, like, film the wedding using drones. So occasionally you get shots of that. And then there's a kidnapping, or at least a disappearance.
Yes.
And someone's gone. And then it goes into a completely other kind of movie where the family is freaking out and melting down and old secrets and old rivalries start coming up. And her husband arrives from Argentina and, you know, more revelations and more secrets and guilt. And I really dug this movie. And I like how it kind of, it leads you along, not really, it doesn't announce itself constantly as to what movie it's going to be and how it's going to unfold. It's constantly sort of surprising you.
After the kidnapping takes place, after the disappearance of the person takes place, you realize that it's not going to be a thriller about finding this person.
Right, not in the traditional sense.
It's going to be almost soap opera-like in its exploration of how this family is reacting and why, and who is reacting sincerely, and who is playing a game, and who
And what rifts are being exposed.
Who resents who.
In this crisis, yes.
who's got money and who doesn't.
Right.
Who expects the people with money to do such and such a thing and mm-hmm. who won't. You've got class differences within the same family and group of, like, extended family members. Resentments about that sort of thing.
Very soapy secrets about the past.
Lots of soapy secrets about the past, which I think bother certain film critics. Not me, but...
Straight men.
Just okay, say, I didn't want to say... I didn't want to call them out. Look, I'm beginning to feel a little sorry for straight men. And I
the poor dears.
The poor things. And I don't want... I don't want them to feel utterly beleaguered all the time. With everyone yelling at them.
We're not attacking you, but you know it's true.
So, when the film never gains the kind of momentum that you expect it's going to gain, you think it's heading into, you know, who done it and how are we going to get them and when's it going to happen? There's a ticking clock and a rescue. That's not where it's going.
No.
It's going in a very... sort of resigned, unhappy direction.
Yeah.
And this family, they might get through this situation. But even if they do, that happy wedding at the beginning of the movie was their last happy time.
Not for nothing is it named after a Leonard Cohen song.
Right. Penelope Cruz, as always.
Oh yeah.
Is so good. She can be in a crap movie, and she's
not that this
such,
is one.
No, she can be in a crap movie, and she is such a movie star.
Yeah.
And simultaneously, such a wonderful actor that she'll take you. She'll take you anywhere, and you'll follow her.
Yeah, it's interesting to see, like, you know, obviously, I don't know if the people who have been in Farhadi's previous films are like, you know, huge Iranian stars, and we just have never seen them before. But to see him work with people like Cruz and Bardem, who we've gotten to know pretty well over the last two, 3 decades, he seems to be getting new things out of them.
Yeah.
Her in particular. I think she portrays a level of despair here that I don't think I've seen her do in other movies. And I've seen her in plenty of, like, you know, dramatic films like, you know, Elegy or whatever.
Yes.
But like she just, there's a guttedness to her.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I don't think she's played a lot of moms at this point in her career either. So maybe that's part of it, but there's a real devastation that she portrays periodically through the film that I think is really powerful.
Is it too late to see this in a movie theater?
You know,
maybe depending on where you live.
Maybe depending on where you live,
I think it's come and gone from Los Angeles.
Yes, but you know, it may be making its way out to, you know, other markets, or if not, I'm sure it'll be streaming at any moment.
Oh no, it's still playing in Los Angeles in theaters.
Okay,
so if that's true, then that means in other cities around the country, it's probably maybe just now showing up.
Sure.
Yeah.
So yeah, keep an eye out for Everybody Knows. And before we dig into DVD recs and letters, allow us to tell you about our Patreon page.
Indeed.
Patreon.com/linoleumknife.
Yeah.
So much extra content and awesome stuff. Every week, we bring to you 3 additional podcasts.
Right.
There's LKTV, a podcast of the television.
You're really being an announcer person
right
now.
Look, I'm in the middle of Max Fun Drive, so it's a...
All right, do your thing. Do your thing.
There's LKTV, a podcast of the television. There's Linoleum Knife and Fork, or as we like to call it, a food podcast hosted by 2 film critics.
Yes.
And Linoleum Nights, where we swear, which we don't do in the other shows, and we do them on Facebook Live.
Yeah, if you want swearing, you just got to go listen to Good Christian
There
fun.
You go, yes. Apparently Dave is a super potty mouth.
No, they are.
Well,
they are.
You worried about you. So anyway, Linoleum Nights, we also, you know, we go there and we talk about, you know, politics and sex and things that we don't get into on the other shows, so maybe you'll like that. I don't know.
We get into politics on all the other shows.
Okay,
including
fine.
Including this one.
But, you know, more so. And then, you know, on top of that, there's like there's a monthly Google Hangout where we'll all watch a movie together on Netflix and have a chat room going about
right.
it.
We recently watched Alfred Hitchcock's Strangers on a Train.
Yes, which was terrific.
April will be something, a different film. I don't know which one yet. We haven't chosen.
We'll decide after the beginning of the month when we know what is and isn't going to be on Netflix. You know, we have t-shirts and we have magnets and
mugs and things and stuff, and go to Patreon and you'll see
all of it listed,
all the levels of subscription, all the prizes and all the things.
You can subscribe for as cheaply as $1 a month and you get our daily LKRX where we recommend a thing to you. It might be a movie.
Did we do it all 5 days this past week, or did we do it three?
I don't know.
We might have to double up next week. Could do two a day and get it caught back up.
We average a recommendation every weekday of a thing. Sometimes that thing is a movie, or it's a TV show, or it's a condiment. Right. Who knows?
All right, this advertisement is over.
Fine. Patreon.com/linoleum. All right, what's your DVD pick, Dave?
Well, you know, my film distributor best friend these days, Grasshopper.
Yes.
They just put out a Blu-ray of Jean-Marie and... let me start that again. Jean-Marie Strobe and Danielle Huyer. Strobe Huyer. The Chronicle of Anna Magdalena Bach on Blu-ray. With so many special features. There is archival interviews. There is a short film from them called The Bridegroom. Another short film from 2011 called The Mother. So, I'm sorry, The Bridegroom, The Actress, and The Pimp. That's the full name of the other one. If you like capital A cinema.
I think you mean capital C cinema.
Capital C cinema. Capital A art house.
There we go.
All right, that's what I'm trying to get at. Then you will dive headfirst into the cement empty pool of Strobe-Huyer, and you will conk your head, and you will say thank you.
Little stars and birds will appear.
You will... You will understand what it means to be a severe European filmmaker when you watch their movies. And you will be delighted. It will fill you with the same joy it fills me. Uh-huh. And then you will understand the core of my existence.
Is The Chronicle of Anna Magdalena Bach a good place to start, or is there one?
When you are talking about Strobe-Huyer, the good place to start is whatever you can handle. So, pick a movie. Why not this one? It's brand new on Blu-ray. Get it.
Okie doke.
Yeah.
Mine is coming out this Tuesday from the Criterion Collection, and it is Robert Zemeckis' I Want to Hold Your Hand, a movie that I remember...
You know, I've never seen that.
Oh, my God. Yeah. I'm jealous that you get to see this for the first time.
I'm jealous that you get to see Chronicle of Anna Magdalena Bach for the first time.
You're assuming that I'm going to.
Whatever happened to that thing that we used to do called Make Me?
It's been a while.
We haven't done it in a long time. It's like we had this big idea that we were going to do it. We're going to force each other to see films that we've been pushing on the other one for years.
Right, right.
And then I think we did it like three times and then that was it.
I think you made me watch Ozard Balthazar.
I did.
And I made you watch Higher Ground.
And then what else?
I think that might be it.
Okay, maybe we did it twice.
Maybe we'll circle back to
that. I
want to
try that again. I want to do it again, only just so I can force you to do something.
Yeah, I bet you do. Anyway, I want to hold your hand. I remember seeing this movie in theaters. I'm kind of shocked that it was not a big hit in theaters, but I somehow did see it in suburban Atlanta. It is Robert Zemeckis' first feature, and for my money, still one of his best ones. And it is about a group of teenagers who invade New York City in February of 1964 to get a glimpse of the Beatles when they are making their debut on the Ed Sullivan Show. Very funny movie. Great ensemble cast, including Nancy Allen and the late, great Wendy Jo Sperber. Co-written by Zemeckis and Bob Gale, who would later collaborate on Used Cars and Back to the Future. Yeah, this is a just a delightful movie. I know the whole thing about like the Beatles on Ed Sullivan has become one of those baby boomer moments that's been beaten into our heads
Right.
our entire lives, but this movie is really charming and funny, and it's a fun look at fandom. Like, I think Twitter is now basically if all of this movie were the Eddie Deason character. But yeah, it's really charming. Here, fun story actually. My first big newspaper job out of college was at the Dallas Times Herald, which no longer exists. And I started there in January of 1989. And one of my first assignments was to write a story about the 25th anniversary of the Beatles' appearance on Ed Sullivan in February of 1964. And so,
You're like, that was 3 years before
before
I
I
was
was
born.
born, exactly. So I called and managed to track down and get an interview with Bob Gale.
Oh, funny.
And he gave me this amazing interview
Oh, that's
about
wonderful.
that moment, and that was my article.
Did you save the article? Is it
It's
in
in
your
a bin
bin? Is it
somewhere,
in one of
yeah.
your bins in the other room?
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway, yeah, I want to hold your hand, new on Blu-ray from the Criterion Collection.
We got some letters.
We do.
The first is a comment from Clint about the film Fighting With My Family.
Okay.
And he says, "The odd thing about Fighting With My Family is that the movie is also an origin story of The Rock's burgeoning acting career." That's true.
True, yeah, that's set around that time that
They
he
don't
was.
really go into it very much, but
It was that he was poised to make that leap.
Right. This is from Nick in Connecticut.
Someone's got to put their reading glasses on.
Daddy got to put his glasses on here. Upon first viewing of Into the Spider-Verse, which was a 3D IMAX screening,
Whoa.
I didn't pay much mind to that weird visual style that Dave pointed out in your review. How often in the background of a shot, the images are intentionally blurred with those red-blue colors to give the impression that you are, I guess, watching a 3D movie without the glasses. This visual choice completely passed me by because I assumed it was not intentional and was just a byproduct of watching this super vibrant, fast movie in 3D IMAX. On second viewing, however, in regular 2D, I was immediately distracted and confused. I was looking around the theater thinking that I'd walked into the wrong movie, looking to see that no one else was wearing 3D glasses. This is just how the film is supposed to look. I then promptly remembered Dave describing the exact same experience on the podcast, so I just did my best to forget about it. It did seem that they used the blurry 3D background more in shots that were outside of the city, perhaps to illustrate that Miles was different when the world around him, different from the world around him. I'm not sure. It is a weird choice. Keep up the awesome work, fellows. You make my Monday mornings.
Oh, well, thank you, sir.
Next one is from Cody. I found your podcast a little over a year ago, thanks to Bibbs and Whitney on the B Movies podcast,
Oh, thanks.
before it was called Canceled Too Soon. Since then, I have not been able to stop listening to your thoughts and insights into film, cooking, and the daily life of your neighbors. One aspect I love about your podcast is that whenever you bring up obscure films that either don't get enough recognition or ones that I've never heard of, oh, sorry, that's the end of that sentence. All right. Last year I saw Happy Hour, McQueen, Happy as Lazzaro, and Shoplifters because of your recommendations, and I
Wow.
loved them all so much. I've also been listening to your backlog on Libsyn backwards. So far, I've listened to 2016, 2015, and I've just started 2014, writing down every film you recommend. Needless to say, I have a giant list of films that await me. I cannot wait to be devastated by the Romanian New Wave. Keep up the great work. You'll be hearing from me again. Sincerely, Cody. Thank you very
Oh,
much,
thanks,
Cody.
Cody. That's exactly the kind of comment we live for.
It is the comment that I live for
Yeah.
because I know that I know that I know that talking about films that are way outside the mainstream that make my life worth living. If I couldn't do that, I would not do this podcast.
Of course.
If I had to just talk about Captain Marvel and, you know, whatever else is main in the multiplexes this week, I would never have said yes to this. And what I love about our listeners is that they go there with us.
Yeah, they're game.
And y'all comment back to us all the time saying, oh, I did watch this thing that you told me to watch and it was great. And that makes me very happy because I have spent, as a film critic, writing about films for other, you know, publications and websites before this podcast, I spent my time being told by editors that those films didn't matter because they didn't get
clicks,
the eyes on them that Captain Marvel would.
Right.
I was told that it's fine if you don't review that because no one cares about that. We got like 30 clicks on that title. And I said, well, good. Those 30 people are my friends, whoever they are. I don't know who they are. But that's the reason why we are in our ninth year of doing this show, and I'm not burned out because I get to see the films I care about, and then I get to talk about those movies. So thank you, Cody. You're right, because you agree with me. Dustin! Hey guys, it's Dave's Patreon shipping savior who provides LK shipping labels at his convenience. Oh my god, dude. I have such a beautiful stack of linoleum knife shipping labels now. We're good on how many I have. Like, this is an inch tall stack. And so, you're the best. I don't even know what this letter's going to say, but you're the best. I usually only write in once a year with my top 10 list. So here's my 2018 list to be knifed. If you have not been listening for very long, you should know that you can write us a top 10 list. And we will knife it.
It could be the top 10 of a year or of all time.
Or time or whatever.
In a genre, whatever.
Yeah. And so here's his list.
Okay.
Zama.
Oh, great.
Isle of Dogs.
Mm.
It's my least favorite Wes Anderson movie, but it's still a Wes Anderson movie, and in spite of the problems that I had with it and the problematic elements of it,
yes,
it's still pretty good.
I have a lot of problems with the writing, but I will acknowledge that the craft is still, you know, gorgeous.
Black Panther.
Sure.
Roma.
Oh, yeah.
Annihilation, which did not get enough attention.
Totally. No, yeah. I know. They just brought it up this week on... I was not on Who Shot Ya on account of having no voice, but they were talking about monster movies, and they brought up Annihilation. I was like, yes, we need to talk about that more.
Green Book.
Boo!
In parentheses, next to his entry of Green Book, he says, sorry, Alonzo. But Dustin, I need to tell you something.
Yes.
You also need to apologize to me.
I was going
to
say, I'm not the one person here who's not a fan of the Green Book. That's both of us.
Anyway. Okay. Tully.
Okay.
First Reformed.
Yeah.
Shirkers.
Yes.
Go Sandy Tan.
That's right.
And Paddington 2.
Hell yeah.
And he says, and I really, I'm not telling you my first and second just to make Alonso forgive me. The Green Book. Thank you. Stay metal. That's the other thing Dustin sends along with those labels. He sends me death metal CDs.
Oh, well then.
Along with the labels.
What more could you want?
Not much more.
Dustin, you are...
Candy.
You are 90% knife.
You are 90% knife. Yeah. That's still an A.
Yeah.
All right. We're done.
All right, hey.
I got to go chop some butternut squash and parsnip.
Get on it. All right, y'all are so awesome for listening, and we really apologize for that lapse there. But we're back, and we'll be back again this week with another episode to help us get caught up. In the meantime, go check out our friends on the internet. Go listen to Dave this week on Good Christian Fun, and I'm on recent episodes of Hallmarkies and Deck the Hallmark. Go check out ChristyLemire.com, which is a good place to find Breakfast All Day, which is a podcast that features all the folks who used to do What the Flick, me and Christy and Ben Mankiewicz and Matt Atchity. We're also back on YouTube as well.
How often has Ben there? As often as he was on What the
Flick. When he can. When he's in town.
Yeah, okay.
Check out the aforementioned Canceled Too Soon from Bibbs and Whitney, and also their Schmoes Know podcast, critically acclaimed, and check out the other shows on the Schmoes Know network. Also give a listen to Dennis Enun with Dennis Hensley, All Things Cozy, The Comics Canon, Sewers of Paris, Fat Guys of the Movies, The Criterion Cast, Secretly Timid, and right. I'm sure I forgot You're something in there. Yeah. Anyway, but you know, but we love our podcast pals. If you are a listener to Who Shot Ya and other shows over at Maximum Fun, the Maximum Fun Drive is going on right now. You can go to MaximumFun.org/donate to become a new or upgrading member. That would be super awesome. The Who Shot Ya pin this year is particularly gorgeous, I think. You can follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at LinoleumCast. You can subscribe to this show for free at Apple Podcasts and leave us a 5-star review. We'll read it on the show, and it does help us out. And you can leave positive feedback in the many places where we stream, like Stitcher Radio, TheLounge.com, Spotify, Google Play, you name it. And, of course, again, drop us a line at LinoleumPodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. I'm going back on vocal rest. Until next time.
Goodbye.